We are now ready. Now the mics are on. Sure.
Okay, we'll call the Business and Labor Committee to order. And Representative Conger is excused today. And our first order of business is a public hearing on Senate Bill 1548.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 1548, which passed unanimously out of the Senate General Government Consumer and Small Business Protection Committee and off the Senate floor, it prohibits a job vacancy applicant advertisement that limits applicants to persons that are currently employed and imposes civil penalties on violations no more than $1,000 per violation. There's an emergency clause in the measure effective upon passage.
Please, let's have our two elected officials. Let's start us off. Please give us your name and let's proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Kenemer, Chair Garrett, and members of the committee. I'm not quite sure why the lights just have darkened, but
I thought it was part of the effect. It was very effective, and it was kind of nifty, and
now
I've been thinking,
gotten your attention.
You know, good show. Okay.
My name is Senator Diane Rosenbaum. I represent Senate District 21 in Southeast and Northeast Portland and Milwaukee and Clackamas County, and I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 1548, which, as you just heard, is a bill that passed the House, passed the Senate unanimously last week, and we call it the Fair Employment Opportunity Act. I think the dimming of the lights might be a good metaphor for what's been experienced by the 175,000 Oregonians that are still out of work today in the worst economy since the Great Depression. And I think as the committee members are well aware, this has been an extremely prolonged and tough time for people who have lost their jobs and have been struggling very hard to get back to work. So this bill is not a panacea for all of the problems of those hardworking Oregonians who are trying to get back to work, but it does address a problem that is real and I think sends a message that Oregon is a place of opportunity and not a place that they should give up hope and stop looking for work. So what the bill does is basically one simple thing. It prohibits a practice that has come to light in the last year or so of advertising for jobs that are open and then saying that only people that are currently employed can apply for those jobs. That sounds like a very odd thing, and I think to most folks it does seem strange that we would say that a qualification for getting a job would be already having one. And I think you're absolutely right, and that's what most folks say when they hear that, is that that puts up an extremely unfair obstacle to not be able to even get your foot in the door to be considered based on your skills, your experience, your education, your certification, and your qualifications. So I want to just say a little more about why we need this bill. Because I think that for Oregonians to be able to compete, and we know of those 175,000 people that are out of work, that 4 out of 10 of them have been out of work for at least 6 months or more, and we know that there are now at least 5 job applicants for every job that exists, this is a really, really tough time and a very real problem. And people need to believe that they have a chance to be considered for these job openings, be able to present what they have to offer to an employer, and be able to at least get in front of an employer. And if they can't do that, they are going to be very discouraged and eventually just drop out of the economy altogether. So I think the bill makes a simple common sense change. I have been asked on the Senate side frequently whether this bill gives any right for an individual worker to sue an employer, and I want to just say very clearly it does not create any right to sue or private right of action. It's not intended to create, you know, a Full Employment Act for lawyers or anything like that, but it does basically prohibit advertising jobs on the basis that you can't apply if you're currently unemployed. I think that this has been a topic that's been covered a lot lately. There was a segment on 60 Minutes last night talking about the problems facing long-term unemployed people, been editorials in numerous publications, including the New York Times, and I think that level of awareness is reflected in the unanimous passage of this bill last week in the Senate. So I would commend the bill to you. I know there are other people here, including my co-sponsor and including the Senate President, who are very much watching this bill and hoping that it will be scheduled for a work session and be able to move forward. I think that would send a message of hope and opportunity to struggling Oregon families that they desperately need to hear. And it's something that we can do. It won't solve all the problems that we're facing, but it will do something to level the playing field and create a climate of opportunity. So I would urge you to schedule the bill for work session and pass it out. And thank you very much for hearing it today.
Thank you. Representative?
Permission to use visual aid?
Permission granted. Let's see.
Stories anytime, yes. Anywhere.
And, but you need to give us your name and affiliation, please. I'm being ignored by this mayor.
I apologize.
Diane Graham was an executive assistant. For 3 years, she's been.
Gap Frank, it's looking.
Does he need
I
to
can do that?
Ready.
Okay. All right.
Give us your name.
For the record, my name is Jefferson Smith. I represent District 47 in the State House in East Portland.
Really good up until about 2008. So could you give me a little explanation about what happened there?
And they learned to navigate the new bias, the unspoken reason they've been turned down again and again.
Did you ever have the sense that you and others were being discriminated against because of how long you've been unemployed?
There's no doubt. I mean, I've seen it in print, whether it's some newspaper ads or online during those types of advertisements. I've actually seen if you are unemployed, you need not apply.
Just look at the web. You see the phrase everywhere, must be currently employed. Businesses can't legally discriminate by age, race, or sex, but there's a new minority group now, the long-term unemployed.
Everybody knows we're in a terrible state in this country. Why would a stigma attach to being unemployed for a year or two or three?
I mean, there's a sense that if a person's out of work for a year or longer, they might be lazy. They might very well be people that would prefer to be home. Or they've lost too much already to be useful to me. It's unfair, and it's wrong.
You can use the search bar.
So, thanks for the leave. This was on 60 Minutes just yesterday evening. We did not time that with the hearing.
I was going to say, that is remarkable time. Nicely done, nicely done.
Only takes some of our requests. I'm glad they took this one. It is no surprise, as the good chief sponsor and Senate Majority Leader Senator Rosenbaum mentioned, that we are facing significant unemployment across the country and in Oregon. This is admittedly a smaller bill about a bigger thing. My district is not alone in facing the challenge, and I don't agree with the Oregonian newspaper about everything, but I think we can all agree that in terms of math, the real unemployment rate is almost certainly significantly higher than the reported 9%. And nationally, the average duration of unemployment has climbed to 40 weeks, the longest since World War II. So why do the bill? Why not just allow the practice? Limiting openings to workers with current unemployment, or excuse me, two workers with current employment, can further a cycle of unemployment. Advertising that exclusion can discourage job seekers. We've talked to people who've been job hunting for over a year, and they say, well, nobody wants to hire me because I'm unemployed. Why should I keep looking? That can be used as one more barrier, one more element of being discouraged. Maybe it might have been a more helpful filter 5 or 10 years ago when it seemed that more, a higher number of willing people could find a decent job. But now, when 9 to 18% of Oregonians and Americans can't find a job, it is just a bad practice. It's not in the best interest of job seekers. It's not in the best interest of employers, many of whom farm out recruitment to companies that are looking for ways to cut corners and fill positions more quickly. It's not in the best interest of our economy. If we limit the employment field to those who are employed and discourage workers who are unemployed. It's a simple bill. The bill will just say no job ads that say unemployed need not apply. I want to answer some of the questions to make clear what the bill won't do. The bill won't prohibit employers from taking into account relevant experience. It won't create a new protected class. It won't allow a private right of action. I know the chair had that question, and private right of action is mentioned specifically in the bill as something that is not specifically not created. It won't solve our significant unemployment problem. We have no illusions about that. It's a humble step. But it will send a message to employers that this sort of unemployment discrimination is unfair, and a message to the unemployed that they should work, do their best, and that they are not forgotten. We are borrowing this concept from a similar bill signed by Governor Christie in New Jersey. And we are honored that 6 of the 8 members of this committee have signed on to the bill as co-sponsors. The bill comes to the House with a unanimous vote in the Senate. Thanks to the Senate President and the chief co-sponsor of the bill, Majority Leader Dianne Rosenbaum, for their leadership. I know each of you understands the unemployment challenges we face, and I urge that we hold a vote on the bill today and move it to the floor.
Yes, Representative Garrett.
Thank you both for bringing this bill. I just want to clarify what it also doesn't do. It wouldn't prevent an employer from having a practice and criterion of only hiring people who are employed. They just can't advertise that fact. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding. That is also the intent of the bill. And we think that the purpose will, one, not discourage people from looking or use it as a reason not to continue to look, and also to help discourage the practice among employers when we send this signal. We send a very, very different signal if we quietly or loudly kill this bill. And also recognizing that if people can just get in the door, if they can just get their resume in, rather than not ever sending it in because they read some ad, that good applicants can have a chance, and a chance sometimes is all somebody needs.
And Mr. Chair, I would just point out that that's why, to those who would say this is some kind of improper interference with the private sector hiring practices, it's not really telling any employer what they can and can't do, what criteria are appropriate. It's a very mild, modest step to say, don't send a message to the public about what you're looking for that's unhelpful. So at the end of the day, they can hire whoever they want.
Okay. I have a question. It provides for a potential fine up to $1,000, and wondered how that was selected.
Well, we have, obviously, if we prohibit something, we have to have some sanction if that's violated. And we worked with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, originally looked at various other types of penalties that could be applied, and this was the most minimal one that we found. So we put it in sort of a miscellaneous prohibited practice. We didn't want to create a new category of discrimination, even though that's actually been suggested as something that could be a long-term approach. This bill decided, and we, the sponsors, decided to take a less punitive, more modest approach. So that was how we ended up with that that provision. And I guess I would just add to Mr. Chair that I think it's quite likely that passage of this bill might not result in a lot of complaints being made to the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I think that's why you see it has a minimal fiscal attached to it, because I think that the important message it sends is just don't do this. And I think that what we often find when we shine a light on a practice that might not be in the benefit of employers or people trying to get to work for them is that they just think better of it and stop it. And I think that's quite likely the way this would play out. So I don't think it's too likely we would see very many fines being levied under this provision.
I guess I would hope not. I guess the irony for me is that, you know, $1,000 depends on how you view it, but it seems like is a substantial amount of money. And yet the interesting thing is they cannot put this in print or on the internet, but it can be the first question or any question that they wish to have of the applicant at any time thereafter. And that part I just have a little unsettledness about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think it would be difficult to think of a way of not having job experience be a relevant consideration in hiring. And I think that's what's challenging is that I think most people would agree you don't want to have a stigma attached to being out of work, especially in this terrible economy that we're just slowly sputtering out of. But as far as what ways you can actually go about addressing the kind of hidden assumptions that are made about people that are out of work through no fault of their own, obviously you can't just sort of, you know, say, well, don't think badly of somebody who hasn't had a job for 6 months. And this, I think, is one step we can take to send a message that we want a level playing field and we don't want people to get so discouraged that they feel like there's no hope for them of ever coming back into the workforce.
And we certainly don't want to make their plight worse. I totally agree with that. Representative?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you're right, it can be the first question. But then there's almost certainly another question. And you get to evaluate the person based on the totality of the facts rather than a single fact. And that's why we do things like employment discrimination law in the first place, is to make sure we see the totality of the factors rather than a single factor that gets us caught up that we think is a perfect filter, but that we've seen individualized filters like that be mistaken and discriminatory since, you know, pretty much the beginning of the country. And we're not looking to create a protected class, but based on that, it is the same thinking that motivates this. The other thing I want to add is, by having them out there, it makes the stigma worse. Because it sort of word gets around. And so, oh, you're not working, you're probably not going to be able to find a job. And it'll make the stigma even worse if we try to kill the bill today. Because you say, oh, not only do people put ads, say, if you're unemployed, you need to apply, but government says it's okay to do that. But it's not okay to do that. We shouldn't say it is.
Okay. One more question. Somewhere I heard that, and it was interesting timing to see on 60 Minutes about it being a national concern, that the rate of doing this was maybe around 1% in Oregon. Is that accurate? Do you know anything about that?
No, Mr. Chair. I haven't heard that statistic. I honestly don't know where that came from. So.
And I don't recall either. So I remember being told or seeing it somewhere. Okay. Any further questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next, we have Andrea Palno and Midge Purcell, please. And do we have anyone else that would like to testify on this bill today? Okay, we'll take you up in a moment, please.
Co-Chair Ken Amara, Co-Chair Garrett, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today in support of Senate Bill 1548. My name is Andrea Peluso. I'm the Executive Director of Family Forward Oregon and the Mother PAC. I've submitted written testimony on my written testimony and also on behalf of Sybil Hebb, who had to step out but wanted to testify in support of this bill as well, so you should be getting that. As the chief sponsors of the bill mentioned, we understand that this bill isn't something that's going to remedy the unemployment problem. We know the hard work that you're doing to rebuild the economy during this session, during last session, stimulating portions of the economy, channeling resources and capital towards small businesses to create more jobs, stimulating growth in key sectors. Those things take time. Those things are going to work, and they will rebuild the Oregon economy. This is something that you can do today in the short term to send a message to the chronically unemployed that you care, that we get it, that they're a priority, and that we want to help. If you can imagine those looking for work for a long period of time, new graduates from college, mothers who've been home taking care of children who are re-entering the workforce for the first time in a long time, seeing these kinds of advertisements that basically prohibit them from the start and even taking the chance of getting the job, are making it difficult for people to move forward and get the kinds of jobs and economic security that they need. So we hope that you will support this bill as it got unanimous support in the Senate. We hope that it will get unanimous support from this committee and move forward today to a full vote of the House. Thank you.
Thank you. Next,
please. Good afternoon. Co-chairs Kenemer and Garrett and members of the committee. My name is Mitch Purcell, and I'm Director of Advocacy and Public Policy for the Urban League of Portland. And I'm here to speak in support of the Fair Employment Opportunity Act, SB 1548. Our organization provides support for job seekers, many of whom have been unemployed for long periods of time. We believe that this is yet another barrier to unemployed Oregonians who are desperate to get back to work, and we believe that this barrier should be removed. We've been asked, as we've been talking to legislators about this bill, whether the practice actually exists, and as the 60-minute clip demonstrated, unfortunately it does. A recent informal sampling of job postings online conducted by the National Employment Law Project shows that the practice of excluding unemployed job seekers persists. Such ads were found on CareerBuilders.com, Indeed.com, Monster.com, and Craigslist. Staffing firms accounted for about half of the postings that used discriminatory language in the NELP survey. And my own perusal of job postings just this past weekend found similar must be currently unemployed language on our very own WorkSource Oregon job listing site. So we believe that all Oregonians who are currently unemployed will benefit from SB 1548. In particular, as Angela mentioned, women who are trying to enter the workforce after caring for children or caring for family members, they face particular barriers. Workers from communities of color and from rural areas who tend to face higher levels of employment and longer periods of unemployment. We feel that they will particularly benefit from this legislation. The Urban League is supporting this bill because we want to see all Oregonians with a fair chance to get back to work. Our constituents, we traditionally represent the African American community. Our experience, unemployment rates of 21%. That's three times the Oregon average unemployment rate, 21%. And this is true across all educational backgrounds. So we feel that this legislation is a small step, but it's a very important step. Where disparities in employment persist, we would like to see it addressed in a multiplicity of ways. Removing barriers is just one of those. It's not a silver bullet, as Senator Rosenbaum said. It's not a silver bullet, but it's a very important step. We would like to see more robust measures that actually creates jobs, provides training, and really support Oregonians getting back to work. So this bill is modest. It will not prohibit employers from taking relevant experience into account and choosing the best candidate for a job. Instead, it creates a common sense provision and sends a crucial signal to long-term unemployed workers that Oregon will help them get back to work. So we urge you to support the bill. And I would like to mention that as far as we understand, there is no direct opposition to this bill. The Oregon Business Association and AOI, I think, have decided to remain neutral. So we urge you to give your support to this bill. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, I'd like to thank those that made the Career Builder link, part of this format or discussion. I actually looked at that document. I found several spelling errors within there, several omissions of years of service and other things. I was amazed by that. And I thought, these are the folks that want to say that you cannot say that you're unemployed. I'm concerned about our unemployment. I'm also very concerned about our underemployment. And Midge, you and I have had that discussion. I thank you again for being here today. Mm-hmm. But more than that, I just want people to understand understand that the face of those receiving benefits is changing significantly. And it's every one of us. I mean, it's your neighbor, it's your friend, it's people you never thought of. And to me, Mr. Chair, I know it seems like a very small ask, but I sure hope that we can move this bill. I signed on to the bill because I felt like it's a simple step, but it is encouragement to somebody, and it also shows that perhaps we just might be in touch with our community enough to know that people are struggling deeply out there. And so I hope that we can move this bill. I'd like to see it done. I appreciate the Senate moving so swiftly, and hopefully we can do this in the House. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think that was a comment more than a question. Okay. Representative Doherty, please.
Did you? Okay. Well, comment or question?
You're welcome to do either.
I was going to be more of a comment, but Andrea, it deals with women who are going to be reemployed, and I've got two or three of the ladies in my neighborhood who have been stay-at-home mothers, working very hard, by the way, for the past 10, 12 years, and are finding it extremely difficult to go back in the workplace, and they are actually facing exactly what Representative Smith and Senator Rosenbaum are dealing with, is the idea of, well, you haven't been employed in so long, and what they've been trying to go through and say is, I've been employed, I just have not been paid for it. So I think that's one of the things to bring up, but yeah. I guess I'll turn this now into a question. Do you see this more and more, or is this part of the entire problem that we're having?
Yeah, and I would say that's been a historic problem for women returning to the workforce after caring for kids or taking care of a sick family member for a long time. I think the difference is that there's a new imperative for mothers to get back into the workforce when their husbands are laid off, mm-hmm. when their husbands have lost their job or are disabled, and that's happening with increasing frequency right now, and it forces women maybe earlier than they anticipated, earlier than when they could get more recent experience through volunteerism or other things on their resume, back into looking for jobs, and they're encountering this as well as additional barriers to finding that employment. Thank you.
Any further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Wilson?
Thank you, co-chairs and members. For the record, J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. I thought I'd give you a testimony from a private sector filter. We're not actively supporting the bill because we feel the bill simply doesn't do anything to improve labor markets, but on the flip side, we don't oppose the bill either. We recognize that it's poor practice to exclude those that are unemployed from your job advertisement. There's been a good discussion of what the bill does and what it doesn't, and I want to just briefly talk about that list of what it does and what it doesn't from our perspective. Again, our HR Employment Practices Committee, we have some of the best and brightest legal minds, HR managers, and company executives on our committee that have spent considerable time on this issue. And quite frankly, we don't know of any of our members who use this tactic, so it's not really no skin off our backs. The bill regulates employment advertisements only. I want to be very clear that the scope of this bill is extremely narrow. We're just talking about what you can and can't say in an employment advertisement. As Co-Chair Garrett alluded to, this does not preclude an employer from receiving an application from someone who is not employed and promptly dispatching of that application because they don't intend to hire someone who's unemployed. There's nothing that regulates the practices of an employer as it relates to their hiring practices in this bill. So I want to be very clear our read on that bill. We're appreciative of the fact that there's no private right of action. We agree that there's none. It's specifically stated in the bill. It is a bully sanctioned event, and even then the penalty structure is quite modest. And again, I do want to reiterate that this is, we couldn't find people within our membership who actually used these practices, this wording on their employment advertisements, and we are persuaded that I should say we're not persuaded that it's a camel's nose under the tent as it relates to new protected class in that line of argument, which is why we are neutral on this bill, given our read of what it does, and I think we're right on it, that we're fine with it.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Wondered, is there anyone for Oli here? I'd like to have a couple of questions, please, if I could.
Ask her if they have discussion to the first place.
Yeah, let's
Thank you very much. Your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair Ketemer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Newhall with the Bureau of Labor and Industries.
Thank you. Ms. Newhall, I guess one of the questions I had is we were talking about this fine, and we've been trying not to do things that hinder business. On the other hand, I think this is a remarkably poor form kind of action, too. Do you have any information on, maybe first on the frequency of this in Oregon?
Chair Kenner, members of the committee, I do not. I am aware of ads that have been presented to me, so I do know that it happens. I can't tell you how frequently it happens because it's not something that we currently track because it's not against the law.
Mm-hmm. And then secondly, you know, as Mr. Wilson indicated, this is a very narrowly crafted bill. How does that play out in enforcement?
Chair Kenner, members of the committee, the way that this bill is drafted and structured is somewhat unique in that it would be a complaint filed by the commissioner under our commissioner complaint process. And I think that's why you have the $1,000 civil penalty in there, is that is the existing civil penalty provision within the commissioner's complaint process. So you wouldn't have, like we typically have with our other civil rights investigations where you have someone alleging that they have been harmed, you would have, how we would envision it happening, is you would have someone bringing in an ad, presenting that as the complaint. It would be the commissioner that is essentially the complainant in that case taking action.
And do you have a discretion in the amount, or is it automatically $1,000 on the first offense?
Chair Kenner, members of the committee, it is a civil penalty up to $1,000.
So that would be from zero to $1,000 at the discretion. Okay. Any further questions?
No. Thanks for your question.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on this bill?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Before we close the hearing, there are a number of pieces of written testimony in support of the bill. One from Oregon AFL-CIO, the Reverend Dr. Sean Henry from the Career Management Solutions of Oregon, and Marsha Warner.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, we will close our hearing on Senate Bill 1548. And I would like to schedule it for a potential work session on Wednesday at our next meeting.
Okay.
Thank you very much. See, I don't need to gavel that, do I?
No, Mr. Chair, we're fine.
Okay. Our next item is an informational hearing. And I guess clean energy works in Oregon. So, Ms. Tirzoff, you want to, do I gavel this one in?
Sure.
I guess we'll gavel this one in. Welcome, please, and let's proceed. Somebody's cell phone?
That Jefferson?
He'll be back.
Yes, he will.
Quick,
yes, Shelley,
text
if you'll
everybody
take that,
in
thank
the
you.
Address book.
Yes,
Mr. Smith.
Some long distance calls.
They thought it might be Mr. Smith, but I don't know.
Give it to the cameraman. Jefferson will find it.
Yeah.
And incidentally, I do need to note for the record that Representative Hoyle was here early and had to testify. So.
For the record.
Thank you. Please, give me your name and let's proceed.
Thank you. Chair Kenner, members of the committee, my name is Mickey Terzieff. I'm here today on behalf of Clean Energy Works Oregon, and along with folks from Clean Energy Works Oregon, I will be brief so you can hear from these certified smart people, but I do want to just note that this is the kind of public-private partnership that's been able to spur local economies and create jobs in your own districts all across the state, and that is why we will encourage you to continue the practice of supporting partnerships like this, and we're just very pleased to be able to support report back to you all positive news this session. Thank you. So with me today is Derek Smith, Executive Director from Clean Energy Works Oregon, Tom Kelly, who is a contractor and president of Neil Kelly, and then a customer and a client, James Chabot.
Okay. Please, let's proceed.
Thank you, Chairs Kinnemer and Garrett and members of the committee. I'm Derek Smith with Clean Energy Works Oregon. As you make difficult decisions about the state budgets, I wanted to share some good news here this afternoon related to a modest and wise investment that the state made in Clean Energy Works that has attracted tremendous private sector and private capital leverage and has led to a growing sector benefiting a hard-hit industry and tremendously depressed areas throughout our state. Clean Energy Works is a nonprofit organization. I have a short PowerPoint for you here to follow along. We're a nonprofit organization that makes home energy efficiency affordable and easy for Oregonians. We do this by offering a one-stop-shop service that includes qualified contractors like Neil Kelly, customer service, quality assurance, financing from local lenders, and rebates that aggregate both utility incentives as well as public dollars that motivate job creation. We consider ourselves to be a broker of marketplace activity, catalyzing market actors to create outcomes, most notably jobs and business growth. For consumers, we help consumers save money on energy and make their homes more comfortable. You'll hear from Jamie, a customer, in just a moment. And some of your colleagues in the building here have even signed up for the program. For the public sector, we create jobs and economic development in rural, urban, and suburban districts throughout the state. For the state in particular, we are fulfilling House Bill 2626, the East Bill that passed overwhelmingly in both chambers in 2009, otherwise known as the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Act. And for the 46 contractors who compete for Clean Energy Works business across the state, and that number is growing, we are helping provide business growth in this economy. And again, you'll hear from Tom Kelly in just a moment. I want you to know, well, Representative Esquivel is gone, but we invited Joe Lorenz from the Rogue Valley to join us today, and he, one of our other contractors from a rural market, and he couldn't make it. But you have the benefit of having Mr. Kelly. For lenders, we offer the proof of the viability of a new sector where returns can be made by opening credit to consumers, again, in this economy. And those consumers are making improvements to the housing stock. We currently work with four lenders, one community development financial institution in Astoria, two downstate credit unions serving Jackson, Josephine, Klamath, and Lake counties, and Umpqua Bank. And as we bring in additional lenders, the idea is that we are going to increase competition so that rates and terms remain attractive on a going forward basis so that we continue to get demand into this industry. For manufacturers, we offer a sales channel. Several Oregon traded sector companies are selling their wares on an increasing level through Clean Energy Works. Endo Windows, Geldwin, and Fleer Systems are just a few of the manufacturers. And for utilities, we offer reliable energy savings to help them plan for our future energy needs. So now I want to show you some results that have come from, again, the state's wise decision to invest in this program. The chart here shows the overall growth in the market of what's called home performance. These are the deep energy efficiency retrofits of homes. So the market has grown from 197 homes remodeled across the state to over 1,200 last year. The blue part of the bars is the Clean Energy Works share. This has resulted in 130 direct new hire jobs created. That's direct jobs in the construction industry. $15 million of revenue to small businesses and $390,000 annually saved by consumers in avoided energy expenses. And a little more detail, and that's all been done, by the way, with a 95% customer satisfaction rate, and all of these numbers are climbing. We have about $10 million already in the pipeline of additional business that's coming, which means that jobs are getting created on a daily basis. More detail about those jobs, well over 700 workers are receiving paychecks because of this effort. Average wages are about $23 an hour. It's through many trades from weatherization to carpentry to HVAC to plumbing. These are all local hire jobs. They're all jobs with career pathway opportunities. And there are strategies in place to help people get lifted out of poverty. And this is our coverage. The dark blue shows where we currently are. I'm proud to say that most of your districts, if not all, are represented here. The medium color blue is where we're planning on entering very soon, and the lighter shades of blue are where we're getting to as soon as we can. And this is the market potential. I think this is very important as you all consider business and labor opportunities facing the state. There are 500,000 homes. These are just single-family owner-occupied homes that are in need of weatherization in this state. At $12,000 investment per home, that represents over $6 billion in economic potential, 36,000 direct jobs, and over $150 million in consumers saving money on energy. And then as we look to where growth can continue in the future through our platform, we could get into solar that's pulling from panels made in the state, EV charging infrastructure, seismic upgrades, and a whole bunch of other efforts that would improve our housing stock, continue to improve our housing stock, and create jobs. So as you can see, we are creating jobs. We're building private sector momentum while creating a resurgence in the housing economy. And I want to thank you again for your support and for your time today. And I'd like to introduce Tom Kelly, who will then introduce Jamie Chevo, one of our customers.
Good. Please, Mr. Kelly, proceed.
Well, I'm really glad the TV cameras left.
I don't know. I've seen you on TV.
Co-chairs Kenmer and Garrett, members of the committee, my name is Tom Kelly. I live in Portland. I'm here representing Neil Kelly, a Portland-based remodeling contractor. However, we do business in Bend and Eugene. And I'm here to tell you about the success that we've achieved with Clean Energy Works Oregon. What I can tell you is that we're hiring. And after listening to the last hearing, I hope is a really positive message for all of you. At the beginning of 2011, we had 5 employees in our Neil Kelly Home Performance Division. Today, we have 33. 6 of those employees came from other parts of our company, and I think you're all aware of what's happened to the construction industry and the whole country and the Northwest and the kind of unemployment that's been in place there. So it's safe to say those 6 jobs were saved by this program. And those were all union carpenters. The rest, 22 employees, are new hires, and I'm happy to say that we don't only interview folks who are employed. That was the first time I'd actually ever heard of that.
And thank you for that practice, by the way.
We are currently recruiting 4 positions, and we expect to hire 8 more employees in the near future. We are forecasting to hire 35 more employees between April of 2012 and April of 2013. A few of those, some of those are going to be part of our Seattle operations, but otherwise all those jobs will be Oregon jobs. In my 36 years being a manager at Neil Kelly, I've never seen this kind of growth. Rebates the state health fund are driving the industry growth. We have been more than doubling our revenues in this division each of the past 4 years, and we're on track to double our revenues again this year. So I hope that's a story that is a good one for you to hear. I can't overstress my appreciation to the legislature in helping establish this program. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify and be happy to take questions after my good customer here testifies.
Let me clarify. So this is the highest growth rate you've seen in your business, even in the last 36 years, even with the housing boom that we had before this.
That's right.
Amazing.
We have a remodeling division. We have a small home repair division. We have a cabinet company. In any pieces of my business, I've never seen this kind of growth over several years. It's unprecedented for us.
That's terrific. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Please give us your name and let's proceed.
My name is Jamie Chabot. I thank you all for letting me testify here today. I'm here on behalf of Clean Energy Works and Neil Kelly to kind of sing the praises of the program. I have a 100-year-old bungalow in North Portland, and if you've been in a home that old, you know that energy and stuff goes right out the windows. And for the last few, I've lived in the home 6 years, first 3 years, 4 years. I was paying anywhere from $100 to $120 a month just in my gas bill, and that was an equal bill pay for the whole year, which was all coming basically out of losing energy, which I didn't know. And then so this program emerges, and I was talking to it was my wife about it, and you know, just looking at all the logistics, and it was kind of one of those programs that you could not do it. I mean, it was like we could not afford not to do it. And after going through the performance test, we basically realized we had a 5-foot hole in our house. That's how much energy we were losing. And
a 5-foot hole.
A 5-foot hole.
That was the sales pitch at this point.
Yeah, sorry. That sounds like a new marketing ploy. Oh yeah, you've got a 5-foot. Yeah.
Now they do this blow test when they make the whole house airtight, and And you could feel, literally, you could walk to different areas of the house, and my hair would be blowing back in some areas.
Holy smokes. Well, they're not invited to my cabin.
Yeah.
So we probably couldn't stand the hurricane.
So we got the whole house fully insulated. You have the basement, all the air leaks, everything cleaned up. And, you know, I'm paying now about $30 a month for gas. Mm-hmm. So...
You keep it below 35, or no? Really? What temperature do you keep it at to get it?
Typically, the thermostat's at 65. I mean, this winter, it's been a little lower. I mean, we haven't been. Obviously, it's been a very different winter, but.
So you have a more understanding wife than mine, but but you're still keeping it warm.
Yes.
Comfortable and, for $30.
And before you could, I was telling Tom, you could walk from one room to the next room and feel a 10-degree difference. And it was literally, all the heat was being sucked up into the upstairs. The downstairs was always ice cold. And now it's even temperature throughout the house. But the program in itself, it was just, I mean, I know I've done a lot of home remodeling and things, and just the idea of not having to deal with multiple contractors, having the loan process be so easy, the rate, I mean, everything was so seamless and just so easy. Like I said, it was like we could not afford not to do it, because I would have never done it any other way. I mean, I wouldn't have gone through multiple people to get the work done. It just would have never happened. And then to have it all done and show up in my utility bill, and it just, yeah, it was
it
one of the easiest.
Proof's there, isn't it?
Yeah, it was one of the easiest processes I've been through, and I've been, you know, this is my second home, and I've dealt with contractors and projects before, so it's a...
Do you know the square footage of your home?
1,800 minus the, not including the basement.
So it's not exactly a small bungalow, really.
No, and there's about 2 or 3 other people just on my street who are currently participating.
So this is how they get more businesses. They get the neighbors to sell.
Door-to-door.
Outstanding. Well,
yeah.
That's true. Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I can interject, they weren't Neil Kelly, though.
Well, we appreciate that honesty.
I have people who are actually upset that they haven't done it yet. They're just like, they're kicking themselves that they didn't participate when it first came out. So,
Representative Matthews, do you have something?
Oh, I just found the comment interesting that they weren't Neil Kelly homes, because in my neighborhood we've had several homes remodeled by Neil Kelly, and exceptional work, outstanding. And I just want to say the intangible, your contractors are just always so very polite. And what I hear from homeowners in my neighborhood is what a fine group of people they are, and how trustworthy, and that their homes are open to them. And they've just really marveled at your work. So my wife and I have been talking about what we're going to do in our home, and quite honestly look forward to giving you a call.
I've got
Thanks
some business cards here.
Don't let me leave without it. She'll expect me to. Thank you.
And that was the other, you know, interject that as well. To have a project manager to deal with was huge. I mean, I dealt with one person, you know, and everything. I had any qualms about what was being done or messes in the yard or whatever, told her, and it got done. So,
Mr. Kinnear.
I've got a couple other people first. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious. I missed the first part of the presentation, so you may have to be patient with me here. Where does the money come for this? And is it just a loan that you pay back, or what's, you know, what's the source of the money? And then the next question is, how does the state dovetail into this?
Right. So, Chairs Kinnemer and Garrett and members of the committee, thank you, Representative Esquivel. I showed a map and showed that we are in the Rogue Valley. We are in your district, so I just want to make sure you understood that. But the This is all private financing by private lenders. There is the state investment that's involved here is helping buy down project costs. So in the case of what Jamie talked about, there was a rebate, and the services of the project manager that he talked about, the energy advisor that helps oversee the contractors to make sure that there are quality, that there's quality work being done, that people are going to, you know, in have assurance that the work done in their home is actually going to realize energy savings. So there's elements like that that the state invested in to help us develop a model that we can be scalable in a going forward basis throughout the state with ideally a self-sustaining model. I think one thing that we've seen, and you know, Tom can underscore this, I think, is that rebates do drive consumer interest. Actually, Jamie underscored that as well. And so as the state looks at investments on a going forward basis and you look to data that has resulted from investments, you might consider that fact.
Follow-up. What was the initial amount of money that came out of the state coffers on, you know, because it doesn't matter how it's formed, it's money out of the state coffers, no matter how you look at it. What was your, what is the total amount and percentage of this program that the state is supporting?
So there's $5.5 million over a couple of years that would, $3 million of which were lottery dollars, $3.5 million, and $2 million of which were state energy program dollars out of Oregon Department of Energy. And then the idea is, so far, we've leveraged $15 million in private capital just to date. And over the course of a couple years, we project that that'll be about $78 million that will ultimately be leveraged of private capital, which is a 14-to-1 ratio on leverage.
Representative Hoyle.
I want to thank you so much for coming and talking about this. I think this is one of those examples where we're using state dollars and getting a good bang for the buck by doing public and private partnerships. So, I mean, if we can do more of these types of projects, I think we should. And what's important is that you're coming back to us to let us know. So it's not just we're putting money out there and we have your very wonderful lobbyists saying, it's all good. Trust me, it's all good. So actually having these stories and understanding, you know, where you are across the state and the things you're doing are great. And I also would like to mention, Mr. Kelly, I want to, although it's slightly off topic, I just want to thank you for your efforts with the Benonia School District, because the fact of the matter is you're a Portland businessman. There is no reason that you would have to be interested in this town that has been absolutely decimated, and yet you have been, and I know that you've been co-chair of leading that effort. And I just want to say personally, thank you so much, and you certainly have my support.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Doherty.
And I think, again, this is just kind of a comment of the private-public partnership, and also with a business that with so many years in the past, especially after 66 and 67, well, businesses are leaving Oregon, they're doing this. And I think this just shows the confidence that you have in the Oregon economy and the Oregon business to do this. And then I wasn't going to say this, but Representative Matthews said I could. You remodeled my kitchen, not you personally, but your company a couple of years ago. And the most impressive thing was, and ladies, you will appreciate this, every workman that went through put the toilet seat down.
Which means it was up beforehand, Representative.
No, they put it back there.
Issues right now.
So either your mother taught you well, or but I was very impressed. But to go through and say I'm an Oregon company, I'm staying here no matter what, and I'm going to go through and invest it. And I echo Representative Hoyle with Vernonia, because it's a tough situation up there. But thank you very much.
Well, Chair Skinner,
yes.
Chair Kerr, if I could, members of the committee, I just want to respond to Representatives Matthew and Doherty. Both made a comment that related to trusting your contractor and mm-hmm. appreciating that mm-hmm. a contractor comes in and does quality work and the fine details, like putting down
fine details.
that's one of the key services that we offer here is when you sign up for Clean Energy Works, you are assured that you are not going to get mm-hmm. a fly-by-night contractor who's going to do poor work, which will result in your project not resulting in any increased cash flow and you know, will actually result in less comfort in your home. So that's an example of how the dollars are used very wisely to assure the confidence that customers need from their contractors.
And that is another advantage of your program is working with the contractors, because this is the kind of area you get those fly-by-night folk who underbid and underperform.
I just need to mention that, you know, Derek has devised a program that is, in fact, it's the best one I've ever seen to support the contractors and to help raise up their level of business capability. And the basically what they call the high road program has really been incredible, what they've done with a lot of small contractors who are now, you know, hiring people and being successful themselves.
Representative Esquivel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious. You said you had a 100-year-old bungalow. And you changed the windows out?
No.
You did not? Okay. I was kind of curious how you... Is it on the historical register?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I have one that I can't change the windows.
Yeah. Well, that's
a different committee.
We have a good answer.
Indo Windows.
Yeah, there's a startup in Portland called Indo Windows that is making an inside storm window, and I have to say that I'm a dealer, so I've got to, you know. But it's a really exciting product. That it's acrylic.
Your hair blows getting that out of my windows.
It costs.
I'm actually looking at those.
It's about 20% of what it takes to replace a window completely, and especially in an old house with a window that is, you know, basically it stands up to the architectural integrity of the house. So it's a product that I actually think is the innovation that this industry is driving. It's going to be the Indo Windows is going to go national, and we're going to be able to, you know, it's not going to be a Nike, but it's going to be a pretty successful company. And this program, I think, is partly responsible for that kind of innovation.
Well, I just want to add to that, if I may, that the Indo Windows technology was funded by the best. It's called the businesses. Well, I'm sorry.
Oregon Best,
correct. Yeah, which received state funding to perfect the technology before it got out in the marketplace. And then our job, and we want to do this a lot more going forward, is to be a commercialization platform for Oregon technology. So this company being one example. I do want to make sure you understand that the biggest bang for your buck on energy savings is not always from windows. It you know, there's typically the average consumer saves about 30% on energy savings, energy expenses by, you know, sealing up the air leaks in their home, like the five-foot wide metaphor.
It must have been hard to not see.
Well,
that
yeah, right. We actually debated it was insulation or windows, and we, with the help of the contractor, decided that we were losing more energy because we had, you know, major cracks along the foundation where air was getting in and getting out, and we weren't actually losing that much through the windows just because of all the weather stripping and, you know, thick drapes and that kind of thing. But see, my home, I don't want to replace the windows because I have, you know, glass lattice and stained glass, and, you know, it's the original windows, so it's kind of...
Mine's the milk glass.
Yeah.
And they're like 4 feet tall by 36, 38 wide.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
They're huge.
If Indo Windows could get part of the program.
This is not a commercial. Okay. Yes. But we're glad to know about it, and glad to know about an Oregon company on top of it. So that's great news. Anything else for this panel? Representative Johnson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess just some other questions about the... Well, the energy audit process, I assume you do that on every project, every potential project, and depending on what that audit shows, you make a determination on where the most bang for the buck can be gleaned. Is that kind of correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And then the other issue would be, one of the other issues would be in terms of, you have Mr. Kelly here, you have other contractors, I'm assuming, like Mr. Kelly.
That's right.
What process do they have to go through to get qualified as a general or as a project manager? And I'm just wondering about the criteria for that, what you look for in companies and so forth to determine if who, in fact, you want to hitch your wagon to or allow them to hitch their wagon to you and so forth to monitor that quality and so forth.
I appreciate the question, and Chair Kinnemer and Garrett and members of the committee. I'll respond by saying that we have an extremely rigorous contractor selection process. We just completed it this past year. Neil Kelly continued for the third time in the program, and we dropped a couple who weren't performing, and others we put on a status that helped them improve their performance on a going forward basis. We do everything we can to support the contractors. We look for quality records. First and foremost, the contractors need to be an Energy Trust trade ally, which has a light screen on quality and other service. They also, we need to look at their customer service records. We need to get positive letters from customers. We need to ensure that they don't have any bullying marks against them. And we need to understand their hiring practices, actually. And there's a few other screens. BPI, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, you need to have the level of training, Building Performance Institute certification, and ensure that you're training your workers and, you know, pulling them from designated training programs that ensure quality, et cetera. It's a long and rigorous process, and we take it extremely seriously so that we can benefit from the 95% customer satisfaction levels that we have to date, and customers can say things like Jamie has.
Yeah, I got a follow up on this. You know, I'm wondering what the impact in the gorge winds on a 5-foot hole is in your house.
just open it on the other side, so
sorry,
it goes right on
through. Sorry, just didn't pass that up. Further question,
so
Representative.
For each project, then, after you have an audit performed, you allow folks like Mr. Kelly and others to bid on that, and who gets the job then is determined by the lowest bid, or how does that work out with you?
No, it's the customer's choice. The customer has the relationship with the contractor. More than 40% of the leads at this point are driven by the contractors, and the model on a going-forward basis is that number increases. So we essentially are a platform for contractors to grow their business and other businesses to grow their business. What we do is, and Jamie spoke to this, is we rotate contractors that, again, are from our select pool that we know do good work and that are overseen by an energy advisor to make sure that the customer has help through the bidding process so that they can have any questions answered, and if they want another bid, they can get another bid at any time.
One more follow-up.
Another follow-up, please.
Just to kind of further answer that, the energy advisors basically keep an eye on the contractors, and if they think a line item on the proposals is out of line, they let us know. So, you know, I think it's a situation where it would be very unlikely for a contractor to be overcharging. It's just the way the system is set up, that would be very difficult to do.
And then one last question. How intrusive do you get into the actual wages paid by the contractor? Do you mandate prevailing wage for all folks, or what's your criteria there?
Thank you for the question. We have what we call family-supporting wages. So we work very closely with employers as well as labor leaders like Barbara Bird and John Mollis and others who helped us devise a wage floor for the trades. The entry-level wage floor is set by the state based on House Bill 2626, the East bill that passed a couple years ago. So there are assurances that there are good wages that are competitive and that you know, ensure that folks are not being taken advantage of, but that also the employer has discretion to, you know, adjust wages as they see fit.
Okay, any further questions or comments? We thank you all for your presentation, and I see Joe has a comment too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Yes.
Thank you.
That was very informative. And I see the owner of Representative Escobar's Windows has arrived.
We have a 1906 house.
Oh, gosh.
It is. 3.5 story.
excuse me. For the record, Joe Esmond with the IBEW Local 48, I just want to give a shout-out. Is that the right term the kids say? Shout-out. I've dealt with them for a number of years, and I've dealt with other programs like this, and I know that a lot of people in the trades and unions were very frustrated, but these people know how to put the ball in the hoop, and I've had some work done at my house by them, and actually just last week we met with somebody from the governor's office to use union pension funds on commercial projects along the same thing. This is going around the country. made the returns a little bit better. So even though they don't use much, many electricians, it's still a good program.
That was a good self-serving comment. On that note, I think, are we any further business to come before us? Thank you very much. And with that, we are adjourned.
We're going to...